Killer Innovation Podcast for Sunday, April 17th, 2005. Show number 6.
Scene 1, Apple, take 1.
Hello, this is Phil McKinney, and welcome to the podcast. Today's show is coming to you from sunny Las Vegas. I'm here for the National Association of Broadcasters Convention, which opens tomorrow, Monday, here in Las Vegas. It's the largest convention for the broadcast industry, and so I'm here for the next 4 days. Just found out a couple days ago that I'll actually be speaking, so I'll be speaking Monday at the Convergence and Content Ecosystems panel. It's made up of executives from a number of the media companies and a number of high-tech companies. If any of you happen to be in NAB, and I apologize for the late notice because I know the time-shifting benefits of podcasting, many of you won't get this until after the speaking engagement, but if any of you happen to be in Las Vegas for NAB, feel free to stop by and we'll get a chance to meet. Likewise, I'll be speaking next week at the 10 event, the Telecom Executive Network event in London, which begins a week from Wednesday in London. I'm actually chairing that event. So if any of you happen to be in London next week, or you live there or live in the area and you want to come to the 10 event, let me know. Send me an email at podcast@philmckinney.com and I'll see if I can't make arrangements to get you into the event. Okay. So on today's podcast, we're going to cover three main areas. One is first off, we'll talk a little bit about what I call the 10 types of innovation. Secondly, talk about weak signals and actually share with you what a weak signal is and one of the whole series of weak signals that I find kind of interesting. And we're going to make this topic called weak signals a regular part of the podcast going forward. And then third, we're going to talk about the killer questions and share with you yet another one of the killer questions from my personal stash here. But before we get started, I have to do the standard disclaimer. The opinions expressed in this podcast are mine alone and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. So with that out of the way, first up, let's talk about what I call the 10 types of innovation. In one of the earlier podcasts, I introduced a list of possible areas of innovation. You know, where do you search? And it being kind of the critical first step when looking for innovations. Some of the ones that I've listed included looking at different geographies, new customers, how do you sell things differently, potentially to your existing customers, etc. It was pretty a quick list in one of the earlier podcasts, so I wanted to kind of circle back and expand on this idea of what I call types of innovation. And types of what I mean by types of innovation is that these are areas that have proven out to be high value areas when you're out trying to search or trying to define where you can have high impact, where you could potentially find these killer innovations. So we're going to run through a list here. There's 10 items. With each item, I'll give a little bit of a description, and for a select set, potentially actually give you some examples. So first off the bat is business model. We all talk about business model. The downturn of the bubble in the late 90s is a perfect example of where innovation in the business model was not as significant as what it needed to be. So first off, one area of innovation is in the business model. Secondly, the second item is networks and alliances. What I mean by this is how can you join forces with other companies for mutual benefit? You know, we see a lot of companies out there that are using partnership in unique and different ways. And in this case, you can actually create some very interesting killer innovations around the kind of networks or the kinds of alliances that you create. We're seeing this in some cases in a podcasting world with, for instance, the tech podcast group all coming together and trying to create an effect, a podcast network focus purely on technology. Number three is enabling processes, how you support the company's core processes and workers. So these are the technologies or processes that are actually internal to your organization that enable and support the core processes just to run the business, your accounting, your finance, HR benefits, tools and technologies to support your employees, knowledge systems, knowledge infrastructures, collaboration tools. How do you apply those to really create killer innovation? Fourth area is what we call core processes. And what we mean by core processes is how you create and add value to your offerings. So these are processes that wrap around your product or service offering to give it some kind of unique advantage or killer innovation. So this would include things like manufacturing of the product, around delivery of the product, those kinds of things. Next is what I would call product performance. And many people, this is the number one area that all of us tend to focus on when we talk about killer innovations. And what I mean by product performance is how do you design your core offerings? What are the features and functions you're going to put into a product or a service that's going to differentiate you in the marketplace? Next is what I call product systems. Now, what I mean by product systems is how you link or provide a platform for multiple products. So it isn't the key of just how do you build one product, but what are the product systems you have in place, such as innovation pipelines, such as customer feedback loops, etc. What are those systems you have in place, and how do you link them, how do you support them to give you a platform to create multiple products, to create family of products, to basically keep your pipeline fresh and moving such that you can maintain your competitive advantage in the marketplace. Next, service. So how do you provide value to customers beyond and around the products that you offer? So this is all the areas of how do you establish that customer intimacy model with the buyers? You know, what are the things that you can wrap around that, you know, 24/7 support, local technical capabilities, you know, your website, things that they can get to easily in order to make the experience of using your product that more fulfilling. Next, channel. How do you get your offerings to market? What are some unique things that you can do around your channel strategy? Do you own the channel? Do you use third-party channels? Do you use middleman? Are you a retailer? Are you a wholesaler? How do you get your products to the customer? Do you go direct only? How do you leverage and how do you create channel advantage and use that as a killer innovation? Next, brand. How do you communicate your offerings? Now, there are a number of companies that we've all seen here recently that have done an absolute phenomenal job on brand and really creating such a unique brand offering from the standpoint of how they communicate their offering and igniting the passion in the customers. Harley Davidson being the perfect example. I think any company out there would love to have their customers waiting in line to get tattoos of your company logo put onto them. And then last, customer experience. How your customers feel when they interact with your company and your products. So again, I'm going to run through the list real quick. Make sure you have them all. Number one, business model. Number two, networks and alliances. Number three, enabling processes. Number four, core processes. Number five, product performance. Number six, product systems. Number seven, service. Number eight, channel. Number nine, brand. And number 10, customer experience. Now, as I said, as we were going through the list, we all tend to try to focus on product performance because we tend to think of that as being the area where killer innovation has its highest value. But in reality, any of these 10 are possible areas for how do you find that next breakthrough killer innovation that's going to change your business. Next, I want to talk about weak signals. What is it, what I mean by weak signals? Weak signals are those early sparks, those early hints that in hindsight, had you been able to identify them and you've been able to leverage them, reinforce them, invest in them, could have led to huge market opportunities for yourself, for your company, whatever the case might be. During this segment of the podcast, what I want to do is I want to share with you some of the weak signals that I track, the ones that I find particularly interesting. And in the future, this will become a regular segment of the podcast where I'll be sharing with you not only the weak signals that I'm tracking, but weak signals that are identified in the press or ones that are sent in by listeners of the podcast. So feel free to send those to me, and we'll share those with the entire audience. In this episode of Weak Signals, one of the areas that I want to talk about is actually something that I mentioned in one of the previous podcasts. I was in Phoenix, Arizona. I guess it was actually one of the first podcasts where I was listening in the audience of a speech being given by C.K. Prahar, who is the professor out of University of Michigan, has, I don't know, half a dozen books out, very dynamic speaker. And he was talking about his book that had yet not been released called The Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid. Well, the book is out. In fact, I picked up my copy yesterday at Borders in Washington, D.C. before I boarded the flight here to Las Vegas. And basically, it talks about how do you really take a look at a different type of a market. We all tend to focus at the high end of the pyramid, the high net worth individuals, the Global 1000 companies, those that we think all have money and capital available to buy whatever it is we're selling. And what CK really focuses in on or tries to get the message across this is that there's huge opportunities at the bottom of the market. Well, in my case, in my job, one of the areas that I focus in on is in what we call emerging markets. Another term that you may use or may have heard for emerging markets is what's called BRIC, B-R-I-C. And BRIC stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China. And when you look at the emerging markets areas and you look at total population and you look at market growth and you look at level of innovation being developed, the BRIC region, if you think of them as literally a virtual region in themselves, is extremely attractive. And in fact, any major company that is out there today should or does already have an initiative around focusing and monitoring the BRIC area. But I want to give you one specific example in the BRIC area that is a weak signal, and just as an example of a weak signal that I think hopefully will encourage you to start tracking these trends, watching these countries, looking for these emerging opportunities, because again, they can be significant. So the example I'm going to talk about is actually one that CK talked about in the speech, and I got that chance to talk to him for a few minutes after his speech. And now, like I said, I picked up his book, read it, have not done with it yet, but read portions of it on my flight here to Las Vegas last night. And the one example that he used both in the speech, and I read the case study in the book, is around what they call the Jopper foot. Now, the Jopper foot is basically an artificial foot. It's basically in response to the issues of landmines and the damages that it caused, these landmines that are left in after the armies have retreated out of these war-torn areas. And the local population, primarily farmers out there trying to farm in these fields, and having these landmines still in place and exploding and causing the bodily damage. Now today, when you look at the market for artificial foot, the two most popular artificial foot companies that are out there, one's called the College Park foot and one called the Veriflex foot. Veriflex foot's a little bit of an older model. Average price is about $3,700. The College Park foot, which was a significant improvement in design, for the artificial foot, is averagely priced around $2,700. In the case of the Jopper foot, which is developed in India, total cost is about $30. Now, when you first hear that, everybody discounts this as being basically, yeah, but the labor is cheap. That's not just the case here in the Jopper. Yes, the labor is cheaper and the parts are cheaper, but we're also talking about a foot that is actually has a higher level of reliability, has broader range of functionality, is more natural in the walk and gait of the users. So we're talking about a foot that is not only $30 compared to $3,000 as the average price between the other two foots, but we're talking about a foot that has a higher quality and is a better foot from the standpoint of returning modality to the users. Why? How did the Jopper foot come about from the standpoint of changing this perspective? Well, basically, back in the 60s, when the Jopper foot was originally created, they were forced that the individual, and you can read the case study in CK's book if you're interested in more details about it, but they were forced to look at the problem differently. They clearly could not afford buying, any of the commercial foots coming from the Western world. They had to figure out a way to do it locally. They had to figure out how to do it extremely efficiently, and they had to build a foot that was extremely reliable because they weren't able to build, facilities to be out in all the locations. The patients had to travel to the Jopper foot centers to get fitted, all those kinds of issues. So dealing with the fact that, you couldn't have somebody come in for a fitting, then go back home, come back a month later, get refitted, let it be adjusted, go home, come back a third time and get it adjusted. In the case of the Jopper foot, they not only built a better foot, but they built the entire system and infrastructure around it to make it extremely efficient. So literally, someone can show up at a Jopper foot center in the beginning of the week, and within a day or two, they walk out with a custom-built, custom-fitted prosthesis device that they can begin to go home and get back to their day-to-day normal lives. So we're talking about a significant improvement in product quality and a significant improvement in innovation around the model. So in this case, the key thing about remembering in this one example is it's just not about, the money or what. The fact that you can get a cheaper labor cost in India compared to the US. We're talking about true innovation here. And when you translate that out to the entire BRIC as a weak signal area, meaning there's lots of opportunities in these markets, they are clearly underserved, clearly looking for innovation, but also have the ability to bring innovation out into other markets. So keep in mind when you're talking about looking or identifying weak signals in either Brazil, Russia, India, or China, in the BRIC regions, it's not just about what you can take to them and sell. It's also about what you can learn from them. And the key lesson here in the Jopper foot example is that changing perspective can unlock those kinds of opportunities. And again, as I said before, the BRIC region, if you don't have someone in your organization responsible for looking at those markets, even if you're a small entrepreneur, huge opportunities, fastest growing customer segment markets, fastest adoption of new and emerging technologies. In fact, I've been to Beijing, and you're staying in any of the Western hotels in Beijing, every major high-tech company is camped out in China right now, trying to figure out how to leverage and take advantage of those markets. So, hopefully, the perspective, giving you my perspective on BRIC, gives you at least one person's view on what the opportunity market there is. And again, the weak signal there is that in many cases, everybody's trying to figure it out, but nobody has really unlocked the magic key to really take advantage of these kinds of emerging markets. And so the weak signal opportunity here is to observe them closely and figure out how to take what you're working on that potentially could be leveraged into the BRIC region. Third, last segment of the podcast today is the killer question. Now, for those of you who are new to the podcast, you'll have to go back and pull down previous episodes. Basically, this segment of the show focuses on where I share with you a series of killer questions. These are questions that I have built up over, 25-year career, around questions that when you pose them in like brainstorming sessions or idea sessions or however you want to phrase it, tend to lend to much better answers, much better ideas than the typical simple questions that get phrased in a typical brainstorming session. So if you're new to the podcast, you need to go back. I think this is the third or fourth question we've proposed. I have a total of about 75 in my personal portfolio, so this portion will be going on for quite some time. And again, if you're a listener and you have a killer question, feel free to send it in, and we'll share it with all the listeners. So today's killer question is what are the unshakable beliefs in my industry about what customers want? What are the unshakable beliefs in my industry about what customers want? Basically asking, what trade-offs do you believe customers are not willing to make? And the follow-up question to this is, what if the opposite were true? So first off, list out what are the unshakable beliefs in the industry about what customers want. These are kind of the unspoken rules, the unspoken guidelines, the unspoken assumptions. And then list out what if the opposite were true for each one of those assumptions. So for instance, let's take a look at cars. What are some of the unshakable beliefs in what customers want in their automobiles? Four wheels, they want a stereo, steering wheel, seat belts, etc. So what if you applied the exact 100-degree opposite view for each one of those items? Let's take another example, airlines. Food, seats, convenient times, convenient airports. Now, the airline industry is a perfect example where they have applied this 180-degree view. So today, in many cases, what the case with food is that you are, in many airlines, or at least the cheap airlines, you are on a 180-degree opposite view, meaning you don't get food. You can buy the local food in the airport terminal, carry it on, whatever the case might be, or you can buy the little lunch box. I mean, I flew United Ted flight to Las Vegas. They obviously don't give you food, even though it's a 6-hour flight, but for $5, you can buy the little lunch box, or you can carry the food on with you. Same way, larger airports. At Christmas time, my family and I, we took JetBlue from Washington, D.C., going to San Diego for the Christmas holidays. JetBlue, however, flies to the smaller airports. So in this case, it was Long Beach, so between L.A. and San Diego. Now, in many cases, you think Long Beach, I got a long drive, whatever the case might be. But in reality, it turned out to be extremely efficient because the Long Beach Airport is extremely small, able to get in and out quickly, able to get to the rental car quickly, and able to get out and on the road. So by the time you compounded or got the benefit of those time savings compared to even flying directly to San Diego and dealing with a much larger airport, harder to get to the rental car, traffic, in the downtown area getting out, it proved to actually be extremely more efficient. But again, it took somebody to say, people think they want to go to the downtown airport, but what happens if you took an opposite view? So again, on the killer question, what are the unshakable beliefs in my industry about what customers want? Think about the trade-offs that you believe customers are not willing to make, or that your industry believes customers are not willing to make. And then what if the opposite were true? And once you have that list of opposites, then use that as your starting point for finding that next killer innovation. And with that, we're going to wrap up the show today. We're coming up right on 25 minutes, so we're going to get this one done on time. Thank you for listening. Please send feedback, comments, topics. Email is podcast@philmckinney.com. You can Skype me at phil_mckinney. And you can also visit the website, killerinnovations.com. And that's about it. And thank you for listening. And right now I'll be anticipating putting the next podcast up most likely towards the end of this week or next weekend. With that, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.